with the shooting deaths of 22 Palestinians at the Haram al-Sharif, the noble sanctuary, on the grounds of the Dome of the Rock Mosque Al-Aqsa on October the 8th, 1990, by a large force of Israeli border guards, police and soldiers. Temple Mount, the Israeli name for Haram al-Sharif, has become the focus of world attention. The Temple Mount massacre has placed the government of Prime Minister Yitzhak Shamir of Israel under severe pressures. And for the first time in decades, the United States has joined in the demands for a full and free investigation into the events of October the 8th, 1990. Why the sudden, seemingly about turn in United States policy towards Israel? It is not a genuine change of policy, but merely a subterfuge to force Mr. Shamir from office and replace him with the King of Israel, former Defense Minister Ariel Sharon. The United States administration is persuaded that when the time comes to attack Jordan and force the Palestinians out of the West Bank and Gaza, Mr. Shamir will not be strong enough to carry out the task, hence the ongoing efforts to undermine his government. Although the responsibility for the death of almost 700 Palestinians since the Intifada resistance began rests with the Israeli government, there are other players in this drama who need to be exposed for their role in fomenting discord, which threatens the lives of Palestinians and Israelis alike, and promises to plunge the world into a dangerous war. Thus far, these players have got away with their crimes, which have brought the world to the brink of catastrophe in Kuwait and Iraq, a catastrophe which President Bush appears to be determined to make happen. I hope that in this monograph and this tape message, we shall discover the identity of those who are the string pullers of their front men. Never before has there been such a compelling urgency for us to know the truth and be set free from the propaganda mills grinding out what passes for news in the electronic and printed media. Who are the main players in the Temple Mount conspiracy? They are British Freemasonry, whose origins go back to the crusading Templar order, and who run and control Jewish fundamentalist fanatics such as Gush Emunim. British intelligence drafted into the arena to instigate religious wars and block all peace efforts between Arabs, Jews and Palestinians. The non-Zionist Jews will be as much a victim of the plotters as the Muslims and the Christians. Beginning with the Crusades, the poor knights of the Temple of Solomon occupied Al-Aqsa Mosque in the year 1099. To understand the Temple Mount conspiracy to create a holy war, one must examine the history of the eight Crusades. Obviously, in the space of this work, it is only possible to glance in that direction. When I first began my research into the Crusades, the main thing that impressed me was that in spite of Christian overtones, it was obvious that commercial gain played a bigger role than did Christianity. Venice kept on cropping up over and over again. The two orders who appeared to have controlled Jerusalem were the Knights of St. John, the Hospitallers, whose uniform was and still is a black mantle bearing a white cross. The Order of St. John was always an arm of British intelligence and remains so to this day. The Masonic Order of the Knights of St. John was founded in Jerusalem in 1070, not by the church but by a group of Al-Mifitan merchants. Only men of noble blood were allowed to join the order. No doubt the American Civil Liberties Union would have filed a racial discrimination suit against the order had it existed at that time. The Knights of the Temple, that is, the Poor Knights of the Temple of Solomon, Knights Templar, were more militantly Masonic than the Knights of St. John of Jerusalem. The Templars' uniform was a white mantle with a red cross. It was founded in 1120 by Hugh of Pagan, spelled P-A-J-E-N-S. Its job was supposed to be to guard and protect pilgrims on their way to Jerusalem. But everywhere was found dedication to masonry. Bernard of Clairvaux drew up their rule based on the canons regula. They took vows of chastity, poverty, and obedience. Only men of so-called noble blood could join the order. Organization was by commanderies under a grand master. With the advent of Guy de Molay, the Knights Templar became an openly Masonic order, whose members took anti-Christian oaths and vows of the vilest nature. The Knights Templar became a prostituted order, carrying out commerce on behalf of Venice. By the time Philip the Fair, King of France, destroyed the order and had Guy de Molay executed, the horrible excesses of Knights Templar and its open Gnostic masonry posture had disgusted most of Europe. Starting out as a penitentiary, pilgrimages to the holy city of Jerusalem, the Eighth Crusades turned into a scramble for positions that would bring commercial gain. As I mentioned earlier, the black nobility of Venice and the black Guelphs were in the forefront of this unseemly trading, using pious Christians and Christianity as a pretext to further the commercial position of Venice. In fact, by the year 1087 AD, the Venetians had captured African coastal cities and gained command of the western Mediterranean. The Venetians were given every opportunity by Pope Gregory to join in the Crusades, and they were even in the end able to persuade Pope Gregory the VII, that is Hildebrand of Soane, to launch, quote, a holy war, unquote, against Constantinople. This was a classic example of wars being economic in origin. The Venetians were bent on crushing their rivals in trade with the Orient. In the Second Crusade, commercial gain and greed played a leading role. The Norman, Roger of Sicily, made a fortune by seizing the Greek islands. In the Third Crusade, King Richard I of England seized Cyprus, which he sold for a small fortune to Guy de Lusignan. This is seen throughout the Crusade, starting perhaps with Peter the Hermit and his tales of Muslim atrocities, which reminds me of George Bush and James Baker III and their tall tales of Iraqi atrocities in Kuwait. I think it is safe to say that it was these utterly fabricated accounts of Muslim atrocities that militarized the pilgrimages to Jerusalem and made the Crusades largely a French affair. The Lorrainers under Godfrey of Bouillon and the Provincials under Count Raymond of Toulouse in the period 1096 to 1099 and so on. Men were recruited to join these armies by promises of great profits to be made. Actually, the Muslims were not an organized force at the time. The Seleucids only garrisoned Syria and were religiously divided into Sunni and Shiite. The Fatimid capture of Jerusalem was carried out in 1098 by Shiites. Stories of Muslim atrocities may have sprung from the violent incidents between these rivals and were grossly blown out of all proportion by Peter the Hermit of Lorraine. The real and most horrifying atrocities occurred when a Genoese Venetian-backed crusade led by Godfrey of Bouillon laid siege to Jerusalem, captured it, and sacked it. with indescribable horror. In the face of such barbarous conduct, Bullion's title, King and Defender of the Holy Sepulchre, was totally inappropriate. The role played by the Knights Templar in these atrocities is well recorded. The Knights Templar lived near the alleged site of the Temple of Solomon and stabled their horses within a short distance of where the south wall of the temple allegedly had been. The Templars were devoted and loyal to the oath they had taken to Hiram, the alleged builder of Solomon's temple. And this oath, I discovered, was purely a Masonic oath in character. What Hiram had to do with Christianity, which the Templars were supposed to be defending, has never been made clear, at least not to me. It was the Templars who occupied the Al-Aqsa Mosque in defiance of the long-standing rule and agreement of equality between Christians and Muslims in the Holy City. Nevertheless, this was not obeyed. Perhaps the Israelis who attacked the Al-Aqsa Mosque on October the 8th, 1990, might have a precedent. After that, Jerusalem became a feudal kingdom. There is a school of thought which has it that the Hiram, so dearly beloved by Freemasonry, is not the Hiram who was involved in building Solomon's temple, but rather Hiram of Tyre, king of the Sidonians, whose kingdom stretched from the Euphrates in the northeast to the Gulf of Aqaba in the southeast, a great commercial empire. It was this Hiram that King David made a treaty with. King David, who lived from 1000 to 961 BC, was Israel's most successful ruler. David did, however, breach the neutrality of Jerusalem, which he made his capital. It was during his reign that literary activity flourished. I believe it is correct to include Judges in the Old Testament in this category, which, when collected, form the Awistic source in the Moses tradition. When David died, his son Solomon turned Israel into a genuine Oriental monarchy. He built the dynastic temple, which was a copy of Canaanite temples in decoration and design. Of course, there were no cult statues. The ark in the cellar replaced that. Solomon's Canaanite-style temple was destroyed in the first 3 months of the reign of Jehoshaphat. Nebuchadnezzar besieged Jerusalem, which fell to him in January 588 BC. The kingdom of Jerusalem, which had the most complete set of feudal laws ever devised, formed an alliance with Venice, Genoa, and Pisa, the motive being to tap the Red Sea trade. This being facilitated by the county of Edessa, the principality of Antioch, and the county of Tripoli, all fiefdoms of Jerusalem set up by Baldwin, Beaumont, and Raymond of Toulouse. With the departure of the Franks, the city was recaptured by the Muslims in 1187, and thereafter Jerusalem ceased to be an organized state. The role of Venice as a commercial power and spoiler appears again and again throughout the Eight Crusades, particularly in the Fourth Crusade, which was from 1202 to 1204, a glaring example of the power of Venice, which it retains to this day, came at the meeting of Haganoa, where feuding crusaders were supposed to come to an agreement under Pope Innocent III, Lotario de Contini di Segni. Instead of carrying out the agreement reached by all parties to the Haganoa meeting, Venice demanded 85,000 marks and that the Christian city of Zara be attacked. In spite of Innocent's unbridled opposition, Zara was taken and sacked. Venice gained materially while the crusade was excommunicated, which of course had no effect on Venice. The crusade was then diverted to Constantinople, which was taken and sacked in 1204. In horror, and unsurpassed brutality. So we Christians cannot point the finger at anyone. In fact, President Bush's lies about Iraq sacking Kuwait, even if they were true, which they most certainly are not, would pale into insignificance next to the horrors of the sack of Constantinople. A Venetian, Morosini, replaced the Greek patriarch. Venice got possession of more than a quarter of Constantinople, plus Adrianople, Gallipoli, Naxos, Andros, Euboea, Crete, and the Ionian Islands. Pope Innocent was powerless to stop the Venetians, notwithstanding his outraged opposition. I am reminded of Pope John Paul II, who appears to be equally powerless against the Venetian-backed nobility steering the Catholic Church in the wrong direction in 1990. Hermann von Salza, the Teutonic Order knight, was the first and only crusader to deal fairly with the Muslims. He established relations with the Muslim leader Malik al-Kamil, and in terms of the treaty agreement they signed, von Salza was able to secure a corridor from Jerusalem to the coast for Christians. Unfortunately, he was undermined by the Venetians, who are not Christians, and forced to return home, after which Muslim mercenaries took over Jerusalem in 1244. The British Army General Allenby recaptured Jerusalem in 1917, using the celebrated Lawrence of Arabia to marshal Arab support to defeat the Turks, in exchange for which the Arabs would gain complete autonomy, especially in the land of Palestine, where there was to be no more Jewish immigration. Allenby totally betrayed the Arabs, and Lawrence was subsequently murdered. Henceforth, the flow of Jews to Palestine was accelerated, according to the treasonous Balfour Declaration, drafted by the Freemason Arthur Balfour and signed by Lord Rothschild, without consultation with the Arabs and without their consent. In spite of the gross betrayal they had suffered, Muslims and Christians, as well as non-Zionist Jews, shared Jerusalem without much friction until the Israeli-Arab Wars, which started in 1976. Jerusalem, up until the time of King David, was always regarded as a neutral city, but major violations of its status did occur throughout its history. The role of the poor knights of the Temple of Solomon throughout the Crusades was marked by treachery and violence. Because of their Masonic type oaths and initiations, they were ordered disbanded by Pope Clement V, Raymond Bertrand de Gott, in 1312, and declared heretics. From the Knights Templar sprang modern masonry, and in 1717 the United Grand Lodge of England was founded. It became the Lodge of British Royalty. Its present Grand Master is Edward the Duke of Kent, cousin of Queen Elizabeth II, Knight Grand Cross of the Order of St. George, appointed to his post by Queen Elizabeth in 1967. Edward takes the position of Counselor of State whenever Elizabeth is out of the country. He received this position the same year that he was appointed to head the United Grand Lodge of England, thus publicly establishing the link between Masonry and the British Royal Family. United Grand Lodge of England, the Mother Lodge, established the Scottish and York Rites of Freemasonry, the former so named after Robert Bruce, the son of a Venetian merchant banking family who went to Scotland following a family quarrel, and once established there usurped the throne of Scotland. It is important to note the connection between Venice, the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry, and Jerusalem. The Scottish and York Rites are taken directly from the Templars, whose leader Guy de Molay was executed for his satanic beliefs and anti-Christian heresies, which included Rosicrucianism and Gnosticism. Queen Elizabeth and the entire royal family put Gnosticism above Christianity. The United Grand Lodge played a leading role in the so-called rediscovery of Solomon's Temple. It is strongly believed by intelligence circles that the United Grand Lodge of England was deeply implicated in the attempt to assassinate Pope John Paul II. There is strong evidence that would appear to implicate this lodge in events that led up to the Temple Mount massacre and the temporary closing of the Al-Aqsa Mosque by the Israeli military on October 8, 1990. It is a well-established fact that Edward the Duke of Kent had strong links with the notorious Italian P2 Lodge through its Grand Master Luigi Gelli. The Mason ritual hanging of Roberto Calvi in London remains unsolved to this day, but intelligence sources of mine told me at the time that the purpose of Calvi's flight to London was to meet with Edward the Duke of Kent, a meeting which never took place. Instead, Calvi met with death. One of the most important assets of the United Grand Lodge of England was its British Arab Bureau, which played a key role in deceiving the Arabs under the command of Colonel T.E. Lawrence. Its most important Arabists were St. John Philby, father of the notorious spy Kim Philby, Wilfred Blount, T.E. Lawrence, and John Bagot, Glub Pasha. With the exception of Lawrence, all were wittingly involved in setting up a Jewish homeland in Palestine. All were Freemasons of the Scottish Rite. The Temple Mount conspiracy has its origin in the United Grand Lodge of England. Perhaps its most important member was Sir Charles Warren, holder of the Grand Cross of St. Michael and St. George, Knight of Justice of the Order of St. John of Jerusalem, founder of the Grand Lodge of Israel, and a founder member of Quadra Coronati Lodge number 2076, which lodge has always played a leading role in fomenting the Temple of Solomon plot. Warren was a member of the Palestine Exploration Fund established by Edward, Prince of Wales, also a Freemason, in 1862. Edward led a British delegation in that year on a tour of the Holy Land, ostensibly to establish links between Solomon's Temple and the Bible, but in reality to start the project of rebuilding the Third Temple of Solomon. One of the most prominent members of the Palestine Exploration Fund was Sir Moses Montefiore, from the ancient family of court Jews of the same name. The Montefiore dynasty is old Venetian black nobility. Montefiore was the instrument used to get a toehold for Jews on Haram al-Sharif. Queen Elizabeth is the present head of the Palestine Exploration Fund. It was Warren who wrote Recovery of Jerusalem, based on the Knights Templar essays called Underground Jerusalem and The Temple and the Tomb, which contain a lot of spurious data about the location and purpose of the Temple of Solomon. From this point on, the Freemason Bible contained 20 or more pictures of Solomon's Temple. The most powerful families of the Venetian black nobility joined in the plot to rebuild Solomon's Temple. Among these were the Luzzatos, Byzantine Jews headed by Moses Chaim Luzzatto, who moved the family from Venice to Safed in Palestine in the 18th century. In the 19th century, part of the Luzzatto family moved back to Padua in Italy, where they established the first of many rabbinical academies teaching Judaism. One of its teachers was Rabbi Samuel David Luzzatto. The Volpi di Muserati family are ancient black nobility from Sicily who settled in Venice, and they also joined the plot to rebuild Solomon's Temple. The Luzzattos powerfully supported Theodore Herzl, the Freemasonic's choice to head Zionism. Count Piero Foscari, head of yet another powerful ancient black nobility family of Venice, got very much involved in Freemasonic plans to rebuild Solomon's temple. These families were committed Kabbalists who embraced Freemasonry. Earlier I mentioned the Quattro Coronati, Lodge number 2076, and it is important that we note most carefully the role played by the super-secret lodge in the Solomon's Temple plot, which began with the Knights Templar. Quattro Coronati Lodge is the home of the Nine Men, also known as the Nine Unknown Men, believed to be the originators of the so-called cycles of disturbances, which are said to result in wars, plagues, famine, weather disasters, and so on. The lodge was founded by nine Masonic brethren in 1884. The direct connection with Masonry and the Temple of Solomon is found in the number nine. The Templars, or Poor Knights, of the Temple of Solomon was founded by nine men, all of whom practiced an early form of Egyptian rite of Mizraim. The Order of the Knights Templar was a decadent organization which became sated with the plunder from the Crusades. The money power made them a state within a state, and what else is Freemasonry, and threatened Philip the Fair, King of France. An Inquisition was used against them. Those who escaped fled to Scotland and joined Robert Bruce, the beginning of the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry. The Order of the Templars was abolished by the Synod, or the Synod of Vienne, in 1312, and its property scattered. Pope Clement V was never forgiven by the Templars for his support of the Synod of Vienne, said to be the basis of the well-established hatred of Christianity by the hierarchy of Freemasonry. Besides its secret work, Quattro Coronati is the top research arm of the United Grand Lodge of England, as well as its intelligence arm. The power of British intelligence is believed to come from this lodge. Its intelligence agents are said to have penetrated every service in the world, including the KGB and the Vatican Security, which in itself is a remarkable feat if true. The Jerusalem-based office of Quattro Coronati deploys religious fanatics and political agents of influence among Jews and Arabs. It is the principal backer of the move to make Ariel Sharon king of Israel. Sharon is in control of the settlers project responsible for bringing Russian Jews to Palestine, which began with Lord Balfour in 1915 and culminated in the Limassol-Cyprus agreement between top-ranking KGB officials and Ariel Sharon. Quattro Coronati was responsible for finding and grooming Theodore Herzl, the father of Zionism, for his role as the leader of World Zionism, whose main task it was to give the Jews an identity with Palestine. Many Jews do not like what is happening in Israel and disapprove of what the Zionists have done. We should at all times take note of this. Not all Jews are Zionists. The Quattro Coronati's Washington office deploys agents of political influence, like President Bush, a member of the secret Masonic Order of Skull and Bones, Secretary of State James Baker III, Kissinger, Cheney, and puppets of a lower order, such as General Alexander I'm in Charge Haig, frequently used by the Zionist propagandist Larry King, the Larry King Show, to give a totally unbalanced, lying, and distorted view of the reasons why the United States military is in Saudi Arabia. Quattro Coronati Lodge has a whole slew of agents of influence in the House and Senate, not the least of whom are Dole and Lugar. All the above are referred to as, quote, circle of correspondence, unquote. Quattro Coronati is behind the agitation to build the Third Temple of Solomon on a bogus site of the old temple near the Dome of the Rock Mosque in Jerusalem. This is actually the spot where the Knights Templar stabled their horses during the Crusades. This dirty trick started 100 years ago, and it is one of the reasons, and of course there are many others, why President Bush and his satraps, and I call them that with good reason, refused to link the return of Israeli-occupied land to the Palestinians with Iraqi withdrawal from Kuwait. a Scottish-born Jew, Asher Kaufman, is the tool of Quadracoronati's Temple of Solomon hoax. He was deployed to East Jerusalem in 1967, hot on the heels of the Israeli occupation, to find archaeological proofs and support for the Third Temple of Solomon project. Kaufman's cover was a teaching post at the University of Jerusalem. At this point, would you please turn your tape over for a continuation of the program? The evidence Kaufman allegedly uncovered subsequently proved to be an elaborate hoax. Kaufman wrote a number of articles about the Third Temple of Solomon project in Ars Quadracoronati, the Lodge Journal. The most compelling of Kaufman's articles was the one published in 1963 in the Biblical Archaeology Review, entitled "Where Was Solomon's Temple?" It was not by accident that he chose a Christian forum rather than the Ars Quadracoronati Journal, claiming that he had new evidence to support his theory that Solomon's temple once stood on the site now occupied by the Dome of the Rock Mosque Al-Aqsa. Kaufman's proofs were discredited by officials in the Cairo Museum, but it was enough to completely fool Christian fundamentalists in America who flocked to support this fraud. Kaufman is a physicist who is not trained in archaeology. Kaufman's unsupported claims were backed by Barbara Ledeen, wife of Michael Ledeen, a one-time consultant employed by the National Security Agency. Christian fundamentalist leaders still support this aberration, the ultimate goal of which is to drive both Muslims and Christians out of Jerusalem and out of the Holy Land altogether. Kaufman has turned out to be one of the most important circle of correspondents for Quadracoronati. Kaufman's controller was Professor T.E. Allibone, a well-known atom bomb scientist and a member of the Grand Mother Lodge of England, a leading member of the ultra-secret Quadracoronati Lodge, and an expert on British royalty. Allibone and Kaufman were the direct contact points of entry by the Quadracoronati Lodge into the Temple Mount project. Another Quadracoronati operative was the late Alex Horn, a 33rd degree member of the ancient and accepted Scottish Rite of Freemasonry and head of the Northern California Research Lodge. Horn wrote a book entitled King Solomon's Temple in the Masonic Tradition. In the book, Horn made it perfectly clear that Solomon was an Oriental king. Horn was assisted in writing the book by Harry Carr, a former secretary of Quadracoronati in Washington, D.C. The Supreme Council of the Scottish Rite in Washington, D.C. promoted the book, which it considered a very important work. While the book contains many elaborate hoaxes, it is clear that the building of the Third Temple of Solomon has nothing, and I repeat, nothing to do with Christianity, the fact which I think the leaders of the fundamentalist movement in America owe their followers. If ever it was made clear that Freemasonry, in which Solomon's temple features so prominently, is a non-Christian enterprise, Horn's book, King Solomon's Temple in the Masonic Tradition, leaves readers in no doubt of its true purpose. An indirect but no less important person was Avigdor Eskin, the son of GRU, Soviet military intelligence Colonel Eskin. Eskin is presently living in the West Bank settlement of Kiryat Arba and does undertake speaking tours to the United States from time to time on behalf of the Temple Mount plotters, speaking tours which are aimed at Christian fundamentalist leaders and members of the United States Senate. Eskin is credited with turning Senator Helms around, which led to a meeting between the Senator and Ariel Sharon. Eskin is a polished speaker, as he has demonstrated at an Americans for Safe Israel meeting in April of 1984. The thrust of Eskin's message was that Israel must support the new right in the United States, including prayers in the schools, oppose abortion and homosexuality, and above all, be what he called, and I quote, biblical Israel, unquote. It is easy to see how the Christian fundamentalists were taken in by this sophistry. Jesse Helms was very impressed by the seemingly sincere Eskin. Apart from Helms, Eskin was a big hit with the Heritage Foundation, Paul Weyrich, Forwell Robertson, and Richard Vigory. To them he stressed that Jewish immigration to Palestine was an absolutely vital component to bring Israel back to biblical glory. What Eskin didn't say was that the biblical Israel he meant was the Temple Mount project to build the third Temple of Solomon on the site occupied by the Dome of the Rock, Al-Aqsa Mosque, and thereby light the fuse for a holy war to erupt. On a visit to Washington, D.C., Eskin told a group of fundamentalists that it was necessary to blow up the Al-Aqsa Mosque and the erecting of the third Temple of Solomon was to be on the site as a religious and political necessity. Eskin, it should be noted, was not speaking for Jews, but he was speaking as a KGB planted agent of influence in Israel. One of his colleagues who works with him in the United States is Robert Jacobs, whose self-appointed task is to build a strong bridge between the Temple Mount Project and the New Right Christian fundamentalists in the United States. The support received from this group is enormous. And in my opinion, the New Right Christian fundamentalists must share the blame for the attack on Arabs and Palestinians on the grounds of the Al-Aqsa Mosque on October the 8th, 1990. The biblical language used by the proponents of rebuilding the Temple of Solomon had a powerful effect on Christian fundamentalists. Here are some extracts, and I quote, "The main pillar of our revivalism is based on a deep-seated hope of old to see once more the priests and the Levites performing their rites will certainly be fulfilled very shortly." And again, quote, "As everybody will perceive the Rock of Israel rising up to deliver his people with great and magnificent wonders, the temple will stand as a token and a glory and majesty to Israel and a source of light to the entire world. May they, as well as we, be preserved to reach the time when the Jewish people will be firmly established in the Holy Land and the temple erected on Mount Zion. And may we behold the glory of God and his wonderful deliverance as in the days of old." Unquote. Such words are a powerful spur to Christian fundamentalists who sincerely believe that the Jews are God's chosen people who must be restored in Israel, so that the second coming of Christ can take place. These sincere Christians regard the mass deportation, quote, immigration, unquote, of Russian Jews to Israel as fulfillment of Bible prophecy. They know nothing about the wheeling and dealing carried out between the KGB and Sharon, which took place in Limassol, Cyprus, and which culminated in the return to the land of Israel of 400,000 Russian Jews. Nor do they know about the Sharon Drobles plan to populate the West Bank with 1.5 million Russian Jews by the year 2010. It is doubtful whether God approved of these plans, which include driving the Palestinians out of their homeland in complete abrogation of the Balfour Declaration. Her Majesty's government, far from doing anything to preserve the rights of the Palestinians guaranteed by the Balfour Declaration, is actively engaged through the United Grand Lodge of England and the Quattro Coronati Lodge in assisting Sharon and his backers to the detriment of the Palestinians, and will do anything to prevent more Arabs from coming in to the West Bank, and they will do all they can to see that no further Arabs are allowed to settle in the Gaza Strip. Just as Captain George Hill, a top British Secret Intelligence Service agent, was appointed to oversee Bolshevik plans for the revolution in Russia, so will British agents oversee plans to erect the third temple of Solomon. Captain Hill was deployed to Salonika, where he worked for 10 years to assist the Bolshevik high command. It is interesting to note that Hill's father had been a high-ranking Freemason in Tsarist Russia. For those who may want to learn more about how Hill operated, I recommend his book, Go Spy the Land. This is a thoroughgoing, good book to get. As for the Christian fundamentalists, they will most probably regard the mass deportation of Palestinians from Israel as yet another fulfillment of Bible prophecy, which is why Christian fundamentalist leaders like Robertson and the New Right spokesman William Buckley are so essential to Sharon and his backers. Using then special assistant to the president, Morton Blackwell, to make contact with Buckley in 1981, the Temple Mount Foundation people have received a lot of support from both men since then. Pat Robertson, a wealthy member of an old Virginia family and a Yale Divinity graduate, has been a boon to the Temple Mount planners. Robertson apparently believes in the restoration of Solomon's Temple, even though, as I have pointed out, the original Solomon's Temple conformed in every detail to Canaanite temples. Perhaps Robertson is unaware of this fact. Robertson's belief in the restoration of the temple on the site of the Dome of the Rock Mosque is carried by approximately 1,500 radio and 100 television stations. Another group who would like to see Palestinians forced out of their homeland are the Alawite Muslims of northern Syria, led by President Hafez Assad and his family. Assad has long conspired with Sharon to bring death and destruction to the Palestinians and Christians in Lebanon, but for the timely intervention of Pope John Paul II, it is very likely that Assad would have succeeded in wiping out the PLO when he had his armed forces trapped in Lebanon. The Christians have not been that fortunate. The recent massacre of Christians by Syrian army units in Lebanon was carried out under the gaze of the United States State Department and with the full knowledge of President Bush, who apparently felt that it was more important to get Assad as an ally against Iraq than to protect the Christian minority in Lebanon. This is in keeping with the secret agreement reached between Syria and Israel that any war in the region would in future mean a greater Syria and a greater Israel. Perhaps I should have said a greater Sephardic Israel. The hero of Israel's Sephardic Jews is Sharon. Levantine Jews are closely allied with Sharon in his bid to turn Israel into a full-blown Sephardic state, an Eastern Byzantine state in the manner of King David, or I should say his son King Solomon when he succeeded his father. The Sephardics are probably more concerned about rebuilding the Temple of Solomon than are Western Jews from the United States and South Africa, for example. Soviet Sephardic Jews now flocking to Israel and the Sephardics already there will forever alter the mix of Israel. Douglas Krieger, one of the chief fundamentalists operating in the United States on behalf of the Temple Mount Project, said, and I quote, "What we are doing here is creating a whole new Jew. Most Western Jews, especially those in South America and South Africa, are going to be so far removed from the Israeli Jews that it will be a hard bridge to cross. Soviet Jewish immigration will fundamentally alter the complexion of Israel. We have to find an authentic Jewish culture. Judaism is Semitic. We weren't given the Torah in Europe. We were given it in Sinai. The Middle Eastern influence will come in and we will be Levantines." End of quote. This ties in with the thinking of the Assad family. Hafez Assad told Sharon that he does not fear Oriental Judaism, but he hates and fears what he calls, quote, the New York Jews, unquote. The Temple Mount Project, run by Quattro Coronati, knows that Israel will change from a westernized society into an oriental society. The change meets the Quattro Coronati approval because it will make the selling of the third temple of Solomon that much easier. As Alibone once said, and I quote, King Solomon was an Oriental king, unquote. This is another reason why Shamir is in the process of being ousted in favor of Sharon, who is being hailed by his Sephardic followers as the new king of Israel. While British Freemasonry runs the Temple Mount project, the day-to-day hands-on control is run by the Israeli government through the Temple Mount faithful Atarit Kohanim, controlled by David Levy, at one time Israel's foreign minister. The ultimate goal of Atarit Kohanim is to drive Greek Orthodox and Roman Catholics and other Christian denominations out of Jerusalem and the Holy Land. Coordinator of the Temple Mount faithful is Stanley Goldfoot, the man suspected of masterminding the blowing up of the King David Hotel, an event which gave the British an excuse to abandon Palestine and leave the Arabs to their fate. Goldfoot stated that he believes Israel must ruthlessly crush Islam. Those are his words. Former member of the terrorist Stern Gang, Yitzhak Shamir, supports the Temple Mount project. On October the 9th, 1990, following the shooting deaths of 22 Palestinians near the Dome of the Rock Mosque, Shamir stated quite wrongly and falsely that, and I quote, Jerusalem has been a Jewish city for 3,000 years, unquote. Evidently, Shamir hasn't done his history homework and apparently chose to ignore the fact that the Israeli military who took East Jerusalem have been told by the United Nations no less than 67 times to give up the occupation of East Jerusalem. Most directly to blame for the violence was Minister of Religious Affairs Avner Shakti, who called for a mass turnout of Jews at the Wailing Wall. His full-page newspaper ad caused 36,000 religious Jews armed with machine guns and pistols to parade through the Muslim quarter of Jerusalem shouting insults, in which Shakti joined, screaming, and I quote, they should learn that Jerusalem is indivisible, unquote. Apparently Shakti is another one who needs a lesson on the history of Jerusalem, which has been divisible for centuries without any trouble. Although Christian fundamentalist leaders have not condemned the October shooting deaths of so many Palestinians, Cardinal John O'Connor called it a conspiracy against Christianity. The Cardinal was talking about the way in which Palestinians were set up in this plot. Enraged Palestinians began to gather on the grounds of Haram al-Sharif after members of the Temple Mount faithful, which has strong connections to the Christian fundamentalist leaders, started distributing flyers that there would be a ceremonial laying of the foundation stone as of the Third Temple of Solomon on October the 8th, 1990. Quattro Coronati has plenty of experience in stirring up Arab feelings, which it got thanks to Lawrence of Arabia and Ghulam Pasha, by teaching that Islamic holy sites desecrate Judaism. Temple Mount faithful guaranteed that not only Arabs but also Jews are incited to violence. Surreptitious videotapes smuggled out of Israel show that the Israeli police and border guards made no effort at all to stop the provocative flyers from being handed out. No doubt they were acting on orders, which, while undoubtedly local, had their origin in the Quattro Coronati Lodge in London, which must bear the full responsibility for what followed. The secret videotape discounted Israeli police claims that they were obliged to shoot at Palestinian Jews who were throwing stones at Jews praying at the Western Wall. In fact, a large number of Jews who had been praying there were told to vacate the area before the rock throwing began. Those who saw the CBS 60 Minutes documentary of the massacre cannot doubt that the stage was deliberately set for the sole purpose of creating dissension between Arabs and Jews. Teddy Kollek, the mayor of Jerusalem, admitted as much. Who masterminded this dastardly act? From my knowledge of how British intelligence works, I would say that it was done by their consent. And I would say that the perpetrators of this crime must have been British intelligence agents operating for and on behalf of the Quattro Coronati Lodge. The intent was to create sympathy for religious Jews and show how urgently necessary it is to level the Al-Aqsa Mosque and build the Third Temple of Solomon on the site. The Catholic magazine 30 Days stated that the Temple Mount project is designed to drive Muslims and Christians out of Jerusalem. I am sometimes criticized for not condemning the Catholic Church, although I cannot see why I should do that. But I would point out and tell you again what Cardinal O'Connor said and what 30 Days had to say about the massacre of unarmed Palestinians. In contrast, the Christian fundamentalist leaders remained mute when they ought to have spoken out. Lest I be accused of being anti-Jewish and anti-Christian fundamentalist, let me say that the vast majority of Jews do not agree with what is happening in Israel under the auspices of Sharon and the United Grand Lodge of England. Jews are, by rabbinical law, forbidden to pray on the Temple Mount. I am certainly not opposed to Christians who genuinely believe in fundamentalism, but in my opinion, these dedicated people are being sadly misused by their own leaders at the behest of Freemasonry, although even the Christian fundamentalist leaders themselves may not be aware of this. We need to examine the origin of this Christian doctrine of fundamentalism. It was the decadent British East India Company who established Christian fundamentalism in the United States through its servant, the Reverend John Nelson Darby. My research into this important subject, which lasted for almost 2 years, led me to believe that Darby, besides being an Anglican priest, was also an agent for the André family of Switzerland. The Andres are top-ranking Freemasons in that country. One of the Andres was hanged during the American War of Independence, acting as a British spy. The André family run a giant grain business and are in the forefront of grain exports to the Soviet Union. Darby's sermons were based on what he called secret knowledge, which he said had been imparted to him by God. This knowledge was basically dispensationalism, pre-millenarianism. Darby said that a modern Israel would arise to its original biblical glory. When this point was reached, it would be time for the apocalypse and the second coming of Christ, followed by the millennium. An essential condition for this would be the restoration of the Temple of Solomon. When the Temple of Solomon was restored to its former Canaanite glory, a biblical Israel would become the target of an attack by Gog and Magog, which battle would take place on the plains of Megiddo in the Middle East, the Battle of Armageddon as told in the Book of Revelations, which would be preceded by famines, pestilences, all signs that the Second Coming was at hand. Darby manipulated Christians into believing that those Christians who shared his secret knowledge would have nothing to fear from the foregoing disasters, as they would be taken up directly into heaven and thereby spared the horrors of what was about to happen. This secret knowledge teaching has strong links to Gnosticism, which is an essential part of Freemasonry. Darby sadly abused the trust of Christians who were not aware of his true intentions, which were namely to create an atmosphere whereby Zionism would flourish under the pretext of restored biblical Israel. By this means, Darby was able to create the impression that moral issues, like the shooting of the 22 Palestinians, means little and should not be allowed to obscure the vision of the New Jerusalem. All events in the Middle East are understood by Christian fundamentalists as the fulfillment of Bible prophecy, a belief upon which the Zionists mercilessly prey upon. This would account for the seeming lack of Christian fundamentalist protest over the massacre of Christians in Lebanon, although I'm sure that individual Christian fundamentalists did condemn it. Perhaps this is because Christian fundamentalist leaders believe that Lebanon is going to be part of the revived biblical Israel. This view is drawn from the fact that Lebanon is mentioned 72 times in the Bible, nearly always in close conjunction with Israel. Another intent of Potter Coronati was to stir up animosity between Arabs and Jews, which would prevent any peace plans from coming to fruition. This is not the first time that such tactics have been used. At one stage, Sharon directed Unit 101, who killed Palestinians with the intention of derailing peace talks being conducted. Neither the Freemasons in London, Assad in Damascus, nor Sharon in Israel want a peaceful settlement to the Arab-Israeli conflict over Palestine. Sharon has some powerful backers, and among them are Lord Harlech, David Ormsby Gore, Lord Carrington, Sir Edmund Peake, Nicholas Elliott, a top-ranking British SIS agent, Charles Douglas Hume, spelled H-O-M, Rupert Murdoch, the publishing magnate, Lord Nicholas Bethel, Alexander Haig, who was a liaison to the Bush administration. This is by no means a complete list, but without this kind of powerful support, Sharon would never have been able to complete his West Bank land grab and the emigration from Russia to settle on it. Remember also that every one of the above mentioned are in the top echelon of Freemasonry. So before we pass judgment solely on the Israelis, let us remember, and remember it well, from where this evil has sprung. The foregoing material should give us a very clear picture of who the players in the Temple Mount conspiracy are and what their purpose is. It should also help us to understand why another cultist, George Bush of Skull and Bones Society, is so adamant about going to war with Iraq. Apparently, the lives of thousands of our young men and women are going to be sacrificed upon the altar of Freemasonry. The Haram al-Sharif tragedy was not even worthy of mention by Bush and his fellow warmongers, who do not dare to cross swords with their lodge masters in London. Truly, we are a nation already in bondage. Thank you for listening.